You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week by the amazing crew, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely. Welcome.
Hey, hey.
I like how you say amazing. I think last week on on Andy's podcast it proved that I'm not that good.
You were great, although it would be nice if you would just embrace the fact that you have a little bit of a dirty mind.
And, I do not have a dirty mind. You guys do.
For those of our listeners, you can go back and listen to that Avengers podcast, and I think it'll be pretty clear. You know, there's no shame in it, you know. There's no shame.
God, I don't even remember what happened. I must have, like, deleted it from my memory.
Oh, no, we're talking about... Nicole and I were on the Avengers podcast.
Master Avengers Theater.
Oh, okay.
It was Moon
Base. It was about Ant-Man, and we have no idea any history about Ant-Man.
Yeah, full disclosure, all right. I don't know, for those of you who regularly watch this show, you will know that I don't know anything, all right? Like, these three people are my brain trusts, okay? Because
I know jack shit
about stuff. I mean, it's like, I know, like, a few pieces of information, but I rely on these wonderful people to piece those bits of information together. Now, I'm on this podcast with Andy, and he keeps asking me, like, obscure shit, and I'm like... I have no idea. I don't have my Chris McFeely brain with me.
Ant-Man got his powers by being bitten by a radioactive ant.
Where's my Chris Triplett brain? And I'm like trying to defer to Nicole, and she's no help. And so it's just like...
I don't know about Ant-Man. I don't know a whole lot about Ant-Man.
And Andy was like really disappointed, and it's like, Andy, I am sorry, dude, but like...
A burglar shot Ant-Man's aunt, and he swore that
he took her name.
Yeah,
knocked over. He became Ant-Man as a consequence.
He's really good at cooking cookies.
He's very compassionate.
I don't know.
He wears an apron. I don't know. You know, so I don't know. And I felt, he was like, well, isn't this, you know, it's just stuff that happened in that, you know, Earth Mightiest Heroes episode, stuff about, you know, what are all the prisons and who does this? And I'm like, I
need to get on that show.
Oh, man. And I think he was really disappointed because he's like, but you do a comic book show. I'm like, yeah, I host a comic book show, but there's a reason that the cast I have on that show is who they are. You know? It's like, I'm there to be... My job is to be funny and ask questions. Like, that's what I do, you know? I just facilitate Chris McFeely doing voices and stuff.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But it was a lot of fun. I appreciate them having me on. They will never have me on again. Any of their shows. I was no help.
If there's ever a Scarlet Spider crossover, he'll tell you.
Yes. If there's a Scarlet there Spider crossover, I'll be on there. And then they'll be asking me stuff. Well, what happened when Kane was first created?
I wish you could just write the Scarlet Spider wiki and just get it over with. I think y'all would, too.
You know,
you're the foremost expert on it, I think.
Scarlet Spider? Yeah, because I'm the only person that's read all of the issues. Other than, like, you know, the people that actually created it. This is one guy that's read all of it. That's amazing. Anyway, it is Fanboy versus San Diego Comic-Con. If you joined us for our live crossover TF Network show yesterday, thank you. We had a lot of fun doing that in the middle of the day. And we have even more news than what we had yesterday because there was a few more panels that happened in particular. You know, one thing I was excited about was the movie panel, so that happened. But for all of that, I will turn it over to Chris McFeely and allow him to break it all down, bring it to us, and we'll discuss thereof.
This Transformer isn't transforming right.
Oh, sorry. Uh-oh, which one is this?
What? We
doing a show or something? Okay, all right.
Sorry.
Which Transformer was it? Which one was it?
Yeah, now we have to know what it was.
It's animated snarl. Oh, hang on, that's what I was doing wrong. That's not code down.
Oh, that's supposed to like make feeling. You know, you're doing it right.
You leave animated snarl alone, man. There, not all the way in. There you go. Okay. Like that news from San Diego. Right, it's all over the place, but most of it seems to be Marvel. Don't seem to have been a heck of a lot of DC news, so I guess we'll start with the big piece of DC news, which was the first thing they announced a couple of days ago, which they were never going to be able to top, I don't think, which is a new Sandman miniseries being written by Neil Gaiman.
Well, that sounds really great, but who's doing the art?
Well, J.D., it's funny you should ask. It's J.H. Williams.
Where is... All right, here's my wallet. Take it. Take it.
I know, right?
Dear
That's
God.
Busy.
It's like a license to print money.
I mean, any one of those things in and of itself would be fine, but both of them together. Now, this is before Sandman, essentially. This is a prequel story. If you've read Sandman, hands up if you've read Sandman. Come on. Who's read Sandman?
I know a lot about it. It's cool. Yeah.
It's on my pile of shame. I will eventually read it. I just haven't read it yet.
Well, Sandman starts with the main character, Morpheus, returning from something. And he is captured by humans. Basically, the Sandman series starts with Morpheus is captured by humans and affects his imprisonment a certain number, affects his release, rather, a certain number of years later. And the first couple of story arcs of Sandman are him putting his house back in order, putting the Dream Kingdom
back. Like, imprisoned for like 70 years? Am I remembering that right? Or
yes, it's certainly, I can't remember the precise figure, but it is several decades anyway. But this is the story, the never-been-told story of what he was doing, why he was dressed for war, and why he was so drained and exhausted and easily captured. It's a story Gaiman had previously contemplated telling for Sandman's 20th anniversary, but it sort of didn't happen, and now we're creeping up on the 25th, so that is happening, and I will buy that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, we will talk.
That's great. And especially being maybe a prequel, it might be, you know, good, at least for like us that haven't read it, you know, and maybe pull us back into reading the old stuff as well. So sweet.
Plus it's like before Watchmen, except no creators get shafted.
Yeah. I mean, you know, original creator, it's pretty sweet.
But find the downside really.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good deal all around. I mean, you know, I wonder about J.H. Williams returning to do any more art on Batwoman. But
it does make you wonder, since that's got to be at least two arcs off for J.H. Williams.
So we know that, I mean, when would the next round of 52 cuts be? Because they've been doing those at certain intervals.
Hard to know.
Yeah, maybe like May or June, I guess.
So are you predicting that Batwoman will be in the next cut? Is that your prediction?
I wouldn't be shocked if it doesn't make it past the next cut. But
I already dropped it, so
dropping it after the story arc now, too, myself.
Which is sad, but
it hurts because I love Williams' art, but the slightness of story has become very apparent without him drawing it.
Yeah, I almost would have rather someone else write it and him draw it, but, you know, that's just not the way things went, so.
All right, no. That's about it from DC then.
Okay.
I haven't noticed any other major news. I mean, we've heard.
Did they say that Man of Steel trailer is going to be with Dark Knight? Is that what they said?
They said that for a while. Yeah, I don't know if it was confirmed or not, but I think we've been operating on the assumption that was going to happen. We know Tony Daniels leaving Detective, but we might have talked about that last week. The Joker is going to be back in October. Scott Snyder's writing The Return of the Joker in Batman, so that's happening. I suppose just right now, Marvel is where the news is at. Anyway, with Marvel now, so before we get to the stuff from San Diego, we take a moment to talk about the Marvel solicits for October. Yeah, just had to check the month in my head. That were just released this week as well. Which include, well, right now it's just the launch of Uncanny Avengers in October. That's the first one. So that's happening. More to the point, we know that in October, Captain America, Thor, Journey into Mystery, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man, Fantastic Four, AFF, Uncanny X-Men, New Mutants, and X-Men Legacy are all ending.
Oh,
no!
Wow.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Now,
wait, I need my little Loki. This cannot happen.
To be fair, though, in the case of Journey into Mystery, this is it reaching the end point that Kieran Gillen already actually did have determined for it. Like, he had a set amount, a 30-issue arc planned out, and there is a crossover happening with Thor across the next 2 months that seems
fair.
Like it's going to
little Loki
fill out.
Needs to be everywhere.
Well, I don't disagree, but hopefully he'll not just get turned back into adult Loki again at the end. It's not impossible, but we'll see. I mean, aside from Journey into Mystery, FF, and New Mutants, maybe X-Men Legacy, it's hard to say. I think we can pretty much count on all those coming back in very short order and restarting. I mean, this is the end of Ed Brubaker's Captain America. It is the end of Jason Aaron's Hulk. It's the end of Matt Fraction's Iron Man. It's the end of Hickman's Fantastic Four. It's the end of Gillen's Uncanny. And, well, these are the ends of these creators' runs anyway. So when these relaunch with the new number one, it'll be a new creative team and a fresh start and everything. New Mutants, I guess one of those, I don't know, would they bring it back? X-Men Legacy, the X-Books need thinning if they're going to launch all new X-Men as well, but Uncanny is also happening, so we'll just have to wait and see. The answers may not all be in the November solicits either, because we know that new number ones are rolling out all through the next couple of months. I think it's through January, October, November, yeah, through January. So we shall have to wait and see. But that is happening. Like we've said, one would sort of hope that FF won't come back, and they have the sense to just consolidate the Fantastic Four into FF and don't try to keep F it. Oh, God. It's really hard to start talking about those two books at the same time. They can consolidate Fantastic Four into one title and don't just keep two books going because they had two books going already. There was a purpose.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Also I need to drop a book. Come back, please.
Yeah, basically. Also happening in October, Avengers and New Avengers are both double shipping and are going to contain a crossover story. So it's basically a little weekly story, four-part story happening between Avengers and New Avengers called End Times, which is going to be the end of Bendis' run. Mm. So a lot of creative runs ending in October. Then to move on to the comic news that we actually got out of San Diego. Random bits and pieces. We know that Jeff Parker's Hulk, the Red Hulk series, Red She-Hulk is going to take that over. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, is she going to be out of the Defenders, or is she going
That's
to...
That's what I'm wondering.
Or is Defenders going to end?
I don't know. I mean, Matt Fraction's busy.
Yeah. It already ended for me. I dropped it.
Oh, no. It's still good. Like, this last issue was good.
Sorry,
issue,
dropped it. Yeah. Had to drop a book. That was one of the books. Sorry.
But that would be 12 issues, and that'd be about right.
Mm. Yeah, it'll be coming towards the end of its first year, and perhaps if that's just Matt Fraction had a year, and well, we'll see. We know we're getting an Ultimate Iron Man miniseries, which is going to be Ultimate Iron Man versus the Mandarin.
So
better late than never, you know. It's by Nathan Edmondson. There's going to be a Marvel Now .1. That worked so well the last time. But
epic
doing it,
fail.
Well, apparently Nick Fury Jr. is going to be at the center of that one.
Yay.
That's going to have a lot of slots going to be on there in some capacity. So that's me. We're all going to buy it. So leave it at that. Avengers, there's also... Or, no, hang on. Is slot going to be on that one or is slot going to be on... A plus X is another one shot. That'll follow up Avengers versus X-Men, which is going to have a bunch. Yeah, just showing how it basically. I think it'll presumably show us how the Avengers and X-Men come together to make the Uncanny Avengers. One would think that'll be supplemented as well with a 5-issue miniseries called AVX Consequences that'll deal with the other fallouts of the series, which is going to be written by Kieran Gillen. So that'll be bought.
Ooh.
Yes, indeed. Let's see. What else did we learn? Let's see. Scarlet Spider and Venom are going to have a crossover in a couple months' time.
Actually, I'm not excited about that, because you know what? You know what happened? They crossed over my Ghost Rider with Venom, and then they killed my Ghost Rider. So like, maybe Venom's going to be like the Black Hammer of, like, of the Marvel Universe. Like, if you have a crossover with Venom, your book's getting canceled.
So, like, Venom's this parasite. In order for it to survive, it has to, like, feed off of other books.
It destroys it. The thing about it is... Well, and now Red Hulk's, you know, moving off too. So everybody he teamed up with it in that crossover, they lost their books. So,
nice.
You know.
Well, the crossover is called Minimum Carnage, and in it, Carnage invades the Microverse.
Wow.
Isn't that awesome?
So it's a tiny carnage is what you're saying. Just a teeny, tiny carnage.
A minimum carnage, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's going to start with an alpha one-shot, which is just referring to the fact that, you know, Maximum Carnage started with an alpha, and it's not a reference to this new sidekick character that's going to be appearing in Spider-Man soon called Alpha.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which was another bit of news that I believe came out between last week's show and this one, which is that Spidey's going to get a sidekick, presumably a rather temporary affair leading up to something horrible happening in number 700, I shouldn't wager, but the basic gist of it being that he's got the power, and Spidey's stuck with the responsibility for him.
Lovely.
Let's see. What else? What else did we learn? The Spider-Man panel has just wrapped up a little while ago. Punisher Warzone. Yes, we saw the teasers for Punisher Warzone. That is indeed going to be a 5-issue miniseries. It doesn't say if it's a weekly miniseries or not. I'm still speculating, but it might be. But apparently it is going to wrap up the Greg Rucka and Marco Cicchetto run on Punisher.
Is his run ending? Is he leaving?
Yeah,
the book?
They say it's going to be wrapping it up. So... there you go. I don't know if that means they're going to end Punisher and then end it with this miniseries. Or
well, that's another book I can drop if they don't.
If they're going to switch creators. And I think that is all the news we had about actual comics coming out of Marvel. Nothing else is ringing a bell.
Did we get confirmation on Wade on Incredible, did we?
No, we did not that I know of. No, we did not hear assemble out of it.
So we're not... 100% on that yet, right?
No. A rumor did spread.
I would love the hell out of it if it happens, I'm just saying, but you know.
A rumor did spring up that Wade could be taking over the Hulk, but we don't know. That was just a rumor from the con bar. Mm. On the movie front, though, Marvel was still dropping the news bombs.
Yeah, they have tons coming out.
So, first of all, we've learned the titles of Thor 2 and Captain America 2. Captain America 2 is The Winter Soldier, surprising nobody. Well, not surprising me, anyway. I don't know.
That's awesome.
I think we had talked about it, and you had mentioned it first, but yeah, that was a likely place for it to go.
Dude,
I think that...
when he falls off of that train, where else was he going to wind up, honestly?
Exactly.
Where else was he going to wind up? He fell into the sequel, yeah.
They have that bit in the first movie as well where they show that he's been experimented on by Zola, but then they never go back to it again. So I figure it was all implicit setup for the Winter Soldier.
Yep.
And Thor 2 is going to be called... is going to be called The Dark World.
Does that mean we're going to get Hela?
I don't know. My first thought was the Dark Elves and Malekith, so maybe the Cask of a Thousand Winters or something, or Ancient Winters, something like that. But then they did the Cask in the first movie, so I don't know what role they would give Malekith and the Dark Elves, because typically, like, they're the actual guardians of the casket in continuity. So I don't know. But Mads Mikkelsen was originally like connected to the film as the bad guy, but he's apparently pulled out now as well. So
What was the rumor that Surtur was getting the spell? So could just be a reference to something with Surtur, maybe?
Perhaps. Hard to know. It's a title that really doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah, it's really vague. It doesn't connect to anything. It's not like Winter Soldier, where it's like there's no
like, right, that's that sort of know what that's going to be about.
Thor.
We got the confirmation.
Gargoyle, you know?
Thor 2, Gray of the Gargoyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. How great was my gargoyle if Stan Lee wrote it?
How great was my... Yes.
We got the confirmation that, yes, believe it or believe it not, Guardians of the Galaxy is Marvel's second film for 2014.
Crazy. Did you see that promo image?
Yes, Groot, Rocket Raccoon, Star-Lord, Gamora, and Drax.
Yeah.
Rocket Raccoon. Yeah, buddy.
I cannot wait to see a raccoon with big old guns on him. Yeah.
This will be either a fantastic movie or it'll be just so awesome to watch it, you know, go down in flames. Either way, I'm going to have fun.
It's going to have to be bad. It is going to have to be off the wall. Like this movie. Yeah. The only way for it to work is it has got to be unhinged. It's got to be tons of jokes, tons of explosions, tons of wacky banter. I mean, that's really the way. Like,
you just don't get sci-fi.
You mean much like that Deadpool trailer is what you're saying, JD?
Yeah, kind of
we'll
like
get
that.
To that in a minute. We'll get to that. But sci-fi space opera adventure type stuff is not a common thing at all anymore.
No.
This cannot just be them mooching around on Earth, surely.
No.
They're Guardians of the Galaxy, not Guardians of Earth.
I mean, unless they pull Peter Quill from Earth, and then he's your POV character thrust amongst all these aliens. And that works for what it does, but it's still a bit of a... It's definitely one of their bigger gambles. And we used to think that daring to make a movie out of a B-list character like Iron Man was considered a gamble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know...
Guardians of the Galaxy.
But like I said, I think if it's fun, I think if it's fun and funny, that I think it'll totally sell. And that's what I mean. It's got to be... It's almost got to be like Firefly in a way. I mean, in terms of, like, not in terms of structure, but in essence, where it's like...
In terms of success or popularity?
Well, in success... other than the canceling.
If it was like half of Firefly, I would love it. But I'm kind of afraid of the, you know, Green Lantern. Nobody gives shit. Space story.
Well, that's because it was like story.
But it was a very bad film as well.
Right.
It was.
the way that this works is you have a team of people that just have to have a lot of banter and a lot of ass kicking. There has to be a lot of stuff blowing up. There's got to be a lot of Rocket Raccoon making smart ass remarks. I mean, it's just like, that's the way that this film is going to work.
So
it's gonna
is
be...
this how they're going to introduce Thanos, though?
I'm wondering if Thanos was for this film or what. This is the story. Because, I mean, I never thought of Thanos as an Avengers film, a villain, and he stood out as an odd choice to me to do for an Avengers film. And if they were preparing him for this, that makes it make a lot more sense to me.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, like, Rocket Raccoon needs to be an Nathan Fillion, right? He needs to do the voice, right? Talking about Firefly, we need some Firefly actors in this
actually,
thing.
Well, actually, talking about Nathan Fillion, Josh Bertram just tweeted that there's rumor that Nathan Fillion's going to be Ant-Man.
There's been rumors that Nathan Fillion is Hank Pym.
Is it?
That was going to be like Avengers. Wasn't that the rumor that he would be Avengers
as like
Ant-Man?
Iron Man too old.
Like, oh, really?
I don't really get that rumor either. You know, it's like Nathan Fillion is a man's manly man. You don't want him to play a total weed like Hank Pym.
Yeah, no.
No, he needs to be Rocket Raccoon. Now, that's a better fit.
Well, I don't know. Marvel seems to have decided Rocket Raccoon is Cockney.
Oh, have they now?
Well, he's Cockney in Marvel vs. Capcom, and he's Cockney in the Avengers cartoon. So,
okay,
I thought he was Australian. He sounded Australian to me.
That's okay. No American can tell the difference.
Is he space Australian?
It's a scientific fact. No American can tell the difference between Cockney and Australian.
I don't want to be 100%. I think I could. But I've also been around acting and theater and stuff, so, you know.
Well, Rocket was in this week's Avengers Assemble, and I was definitely imagining his lines in a very Cockney tone.
Well, you gotta do it. You can't just say that. You gotta do it.
No, I don't have the issue.
You gotta do it if you're gonna.
Rocket, he's sort of like that. He's a bit, you know, and all that. Are we having pizza? Is that a pizza coming? he was ordering pizza in this week's
that's
Avengers.
Awesome. Assemble. See, that's what has to happen in the movie. Yeah. Great.
McFeely for Rocket. There you go. Let's campaign it.
They got the guy from the cartoon, given the way they seem to be consolidating all their voice actors across their projects lately. Yeah. Just get the guy from the cartoon to do the voice.
Okay, who wants to guess how many appearances Guardians of the Galaxy will be making in comics between now and...
Everywhere.
That was another thing from the October solicits, is that Bendis and Bagley's Avengers Assemble, it specifically says the end of their run on issue 8, so it's an 8-part story about the Guardians and Thanos. He'll be taking that over. As I say, we don't know yet, but that's, Bendis is also finishing on that with issue 8 as well. So, but that's a nice Guardians-based trade paperback that they can pump out and have on the shelves probably in the early stages of next year.
We still haven't gotten much more news on when we're getting Ultron War, but that still is supposedly a thing.
That's just up there, yeah. I don't know what's going on with that. What else? Right, there was footage from Iron Man 3 shown at the convention as well, which definitely seems to suggest that Tony is going to get extremist, because we see pieces, we haven't seen the footage, it was shown, it was only described, but we do see his armor flying onto his body in pieces.
Sweet.
Remote control.
Now, what do you like the new... Mark, is it the Mark 8 now? Is that what they're at?
I'm going to operate under the assumption that is just, he's just going to have that at the very end.
That'll be the end armor, just like...
Or it might be the...
It's like a pre-armor or something. It's missing a piece. Something needs to go over it to cover some of the ugliness.
Looks naked. But we also, in this very same footage, got the confirmation that Ben Kingsley is the Mandarin.
Yeah.
He is the actual Mandarin with his beard and his little hair and all his rings.
Yes! Rings!
He is playing the man. And it's about damn time.
Do the rings! Do the rings!
And if you haven't seen it, you should definitely go and check out the video of Robert Downey Jr.'s entrance to that panel.
Awesome.
It was the lines of fiction and reality were just pressing up against each other. It was like the Stark Expo.
Oh yeah, it was great. He even had like
the Pulsar gauntlet on.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You could hear the audience freaking.
I saw the thing where like the kid had like the costume contest. And
yeah, and he
I
did
don't think
that well.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. So
Robert Downey Jr.
Cool.
has proven very cool. This kid. There was a kid's costume contest. Where they were all dressed up as Iron Man, and then just from behind them, Robert Downey Jr. appeared. And it was like...
so cool.
It's really weird, actually, whenever you follow like celebrities and voice talent and things on Twitter, and you see all their photographs from the convention, and you're like, God, how many people are at this? How many celebrities and big, important people are at this thing, you know?
Well, because I just posted a picture of Matt Smith and Nathan Fillion together. I'm like,
I know. It's like, where does that happen, you know? Does that happen on the floor, or is there a big back room where they just keep all the celebrities and shuffle them out?
I don't know.
Like, every year, Adam Savage does this thing that he calls Adam Incognito, and he always cosplays, and he wears something that is, like, completely head-covering. You can't tell who he is. Adam Savage from Mythbusters, if you don't know who I'm talking about. But, and it's the whole deal where, like, he goes on Twitter and says, all right, I'm here. Find me. And then, like,
well, what was it? Justin Timberlake did that last year. He dressed up as Ernie.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
And I think other people started doing it, but I'm pretty sure Adam Savage did it first. He went as the bank robbery version of Joker a couple years ago. He was one of the kings from Lord of the Rings, the Ring Wraiths this year. And I think the people that found him first got tickets to like their show that night or whatever. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of celebrities there. Another celebrity that I follow. Adrian Curry, who was like the first winner of Next Top Model, and she does a lot of video game stuff now. She went as the Raptor Jesus. That's awesome. But anyway, yeah, I know there's tons of celebrities that just walk around. I mean,
well, because now Comic-Con's cool. It's not just for geeks.
Yeah, not just for geeks. It's for geeks with a lot of money. And geeks are in Hollywood, so... Yeah, that's the thing that I mean, like, the universe imploded earlier. It was a picture of, like, Matt Smith and Nathan Fillion. Yeah, that was like,
I know. We were just talking about
it. I felt the universe crashing on itself when I see that. It's just like, ah. Anyway.
Also, at the movie panel, Edgar Wright showed his test footage from Ant-Man. Which is just Ant-Man doing a lot of shrinking and growing and beating people up.
Did Ant-Man get killed by burglar?
Just him doing a little ass kicking. It wasn't even like a trailer or anything, just some unfinished like footage with shrinking effects in there. And the way he described it is you can almost bet you'll hear this line in the trailer now, kicking your ass one inch at a time.
So they're really talking about going with like the second Ant-Man with this seems to be the... Like not,
who knows?
Not going
this is
him.
Just test footage, you know. We'll find out. I think I would say whatever plans were in mind for this will be dramatically changed now. With the Avengers being a thing now, this was conceived. The original idea like that was conceived before the Avengers was even actually happening, you know, and it was tabled to for all the Phase One Avengers stuff. Now we're into Phase Two. It'll be different.
Yeah.
Another weird one, and from the other media files is that the Marvel superheroes are going to have a crossover with Phineas and Ferb.
Are you serious?
That's cool. Happening.
I didn't hear this.
I'm sorry. My brain crumbled in on itself for a second. Can you say that again?
The Phineas and Ferb are going to have a crossover with the. Well, just looking at the trailer right now, Iron Man, Spider-Man, the Hulk.
Uh-huh.
This is happening. It's an animated feature.
They're getting everywhere, aren't they? Those Avengers are like little sluts are getting around.
See? Well, this she says that we're the ones that plant these dirty thoughts in her head. See, I just want to call attention to that. No one prompted her to say that.
No, I was just thinking about a couple of the comic books I read this week.
This is a stepping stone to Iron Man and Mickey Mouse teaming up. I say it's going to happen.
Oh, I'm telling.
Iron Mouse. Mouse is going to happen.
Where are my DC or not? But where are my like Disney Marvel crossover figures, man?
Exactly.
Come on,
Donald America. You know.
Yeah, I want a Donald Duck as Captain America. That would be sweet. Go for that.
Mini Widow.
Mini Widow.
Mini.
So this is getting pretty weird. But yeah, it's called Mission Marvel, and it's a thing that's happening.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. But seriously.
And it's not, I've just seen it's been asked in the chat there, is it a superhero squad version? It's not. It's they look like, you know, the current versions. I imagine probably like what?
So it's
Hulk,
like
Thor,
a...
Iron Man, and Spidey. And Spidey looks like he does an Ultimate Spidey. So.
Are they going to do like the same thing like they do with Howard the Duck? He's just there and you just got to accept it. Kind of like...
I don't know. There's probably going to be some reality smushing going on and stuff that happens. I don't watch Phineas and Ferb, but I understand it's very good.
It's funny. I like it.
Sticking with the other media, we've also got the rather surprising announcement of a Deadpool video game by High Moon.
Wow.
Yeah.
What the hell?
That'll be fun.
Now,
there's a trailer for this.
Yes.
It is a Deadpool movie coming out, because why in the hell would they make a Deadpool game? That makes no sense
to me. It's like... I don't think it's physically possible for this trailer to leave me any more frustrated than it does. Because it's like... okay, first of all, it's the dreadful Daniel Way version of Deadpool. It's only a couple of years old, where he has two random personalities that talk at him through his caption boxes. And the caption boxes appear and talk at him, and it's like... This is perfectly illustrating why this is a comic book thing and not something that works in motion as like a movie, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And it's bad also, you know. I don't do it. It's stupid and it smells funny. And JoJo Kelly's Deadpool is the best. But more than that, you know, it just like, well, first of all, like the Deadpool bubble popped. Okay, so I don't know what's going on with this. It's like they decided to make a Deadpool thing because nerds post images of Deadpool on 4chan or something. I don't know, on like image boards.
Maybe it's been in development for a long time, and they announced it at Comic-Con because I can't imagine
it's been in development that long. Given the Deadpool bubble popped like a couple of years ago after the weird surge in popularity he had, it's very like nerd culture driven as a concept, the Deadpool video game. But more to the point, outside of like things like that, I'm legitimately annoyed by the use of swearing in the trailer and the fact that the game's going to be R-rated for violence and language, because that's not Deadpool, and that's not what I expect from an adaptation of a Marvel property. Now, you can gripe and you can moan about, you know, what Marvel allow to be seen in their comics in terms of violence or sex or whatever, what have you, but I'm not going to go pick up an issue of Deadpool and find him swearing. And it's distracting to me. And I don't see it. I don't find it in the Marvel films in that sort of extent. And I don't see violence like that in the Marvel films or the Marvel cartoons. Like, heads lopped off, exploding. Lowest common denominator video game culture shit. And video game culture, quotes, air quotes, is one of the vilest things in this universe that I hate above a lot of other things. It's only slightly less terrible than the Holocaust, okay? Wow. It is one of the worst things.
That's
gamer culture. I mean, you should see some of the things that have been erupting around this. The sexist, racist connotations that this culture has, that they try to be, they won't apologize for because they claim it's part of their culture, as if they were some kind of race. Oh, it's vile. I despise it. And the fact that I'm seeing this trailer and seeing this appeal to that subset of people spawn from the fact that the internet says Deadpool is cool, so we should have a Deadpool video game. I don't think I could physically be more frustrated in any way. I'll still play it, but I don't know. I'm just to see what it's like. But it does not sit well for me on many levels.
So I guess I shouldn't...
I think it's funny that he says when he shoots his guns.
So yeah, I mean, that's funny. That's like Deadpool. It's like you didn't see any of this in... Deadpool's portrayal in Marvel vs. Capcom was great. You found yourself playing as Deadpool in Marvel vs. Capcom just to see what he was going to say next or do next, because he had...
I got to interject, because I don't completely agree. I read a lot of Deadpool a couple years ago, and the violence level in this seemed very much in line with the stuff that was going on with Deadpool at that time.
It's just that the trailer puts it at such a rapid-fire barrage and goes, look, his head exploded, this is cool by the game.
Well, okay, like, I remember one issue of Deadpool during Secret Invasion in which he was convincing the Skrulls to shoot each other in the head.
Yeah, but they're alien.
Okay, but he was, he, you know what I mean? It's like, it's same.
Yeah, okay, difference. No, I admit I don't really have much of a leg to stand on with the violence thing, but
I mean,
I think it's just that taken in... Yeah, it's inherent, but it's that taken in conjunction with the video game culture that really glorifies it and finds new ways to take it to excesses for entertainment that grates on me.
That's
it's ill with what my idea of Marvel, and in particular, not just Marvel Comics, but how Marvel farm out their properties. You know, I won't find a cartoon, I won't find a film that contains anything like that.
Well, and I agree with that.
Well, even another video game, in fact.
But again, that's where I'm saying it's like, this seems like the Deadpool that I know and read, at least from a few years ago when I was still reading the book. I mean,
no, that's the wrong Deadpool and the bad Deadpool.
That's a value discussion, right? That's like, you're making a distinction between one that you like and one others may like.
But if anybody likes that one, they're wrong.
Okay.
Smell funny.
Thanks.
Because... That is the Bugs Bunny with guns Deadpool, where instead of actually having Deadpool do clever fourth wall breaking jokes, which were never the best thing about Deadpool anyway, we just gave him multiple personalities so he could talk with them, and instead of actually making jokes, he just gets confused when he talks to his other personalities, and from thence the humor arises.
I think on like both sides of that. Like I think I came on before and then after that happened, but. But I want to say that I agree with your statement about, like, the video game culture. I mean, I think the worst example of it is, like, Arkham City, where you have, like, these grotesque, you know, twisted versions of villains. I mean, like, you even mentioned, like, Penguin in that, where he has, like...
Oh, I hit the visual
he has
here.
That Jackson
you, you go try to play, you go try play Arkham Asylum as Catwoman, and just get a little clock or stopwatch or something, and just time before how long you go before you start hearing, "Hey, bitch! Bitch! Oh, yeah. It's that bitch Catwoman! Hey, bitch! Oh, I'm gonna start that bitch out! Oh, look at that bitch!"
Totally agree. I mean, so I agree with the video game culture bit. But this is the one instance where I'd say that, at least for the version of Deadpool that they have got, that Marvel has gone forward with, this seems to fit. I mean, this seems to be that.
I don't even think
it, it didn't affect me. The trailer, I was like, yeah, it's video game violence. What blows my mind is it's a Deadpool video game. That's like Gambit getting a comic again to me. You know, it makes no damn sense.
Yeah, it I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't seem oddly timed or, you know, out of place in that sense. So. That is the other thing that's a little odd. I'm not going to complain, though, because I want my PS3 to work so I can play this.
But it seems very... I think that's still Nolan North voicing Deadpool as well, who did him in the games. His portrayal in Marvel vs. Capcom 3 was absolutely fine. They did break the fourth wall in the right way, and they didn't have little weird caption boxes flashing up next to him. It just seems like a very thoughtless adaptation of Deadpool. Mm. It's just like, oh, he does that in the comic? Well, that surely work in a video game. I mean, why wouldn't something from a visual and text-based medium work in motion and animation?
We talk about, like, the reason Onomatopoeia from, like, DC that Kevin Smith created, like, you'll never see that character or shouldn't see that character on screen because it just wouldn't work. But the voice is, like, the one thing that did kind of bother me.
Oh, yeah. Well, he didn't – it wasn't nearly – it's changed over time, you know.
The original description I had heard of Deadpool's voice is that it's supposed to have like a gasoline being poured over coals sort of quality. Like, you know, it's supposed to be really gruffly in, you know, these
so like, you're saying he should sound like Wolverine is what you're saying.
No.
Hey, Bob.
No, I mean, I have a mental idea of what Deadpool's voice is sound like, and I find that things like Ultimate Alliance or even Marvel vs. Capcom basically kept that up. But this one seems to have softened it up much more than I was used to. I don't know if it's a deliberate choice or just a general softening of the voice that has come about as a result of having to expand him beyond one-liners.
I think it's the
need to let the actor act.
If I had to say, I would say it's probably due to Wolverine Origins, where, you know, you had Nicole, who was that?
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, thank you. I just thought I'd throw her on the rest
there. There's nothing wrong with Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool.
But I think the, you know, Ryan Reynolds voicing Deadpool, I think they've tried to latch onto that as a distinction. And that's kind of
Ryan Reynolds, though. I don't know.
It doesn't,
well,
but that it sounds
with
normal.
Me
that's what I'm saying. Like, his voice sounds normal. It's not like, you know, they tried to do him with a gruff voice for any reason, because they completely changed that character in those movies. Bastards. Anyway, I don't know. It's a game I want to play. I didn't feel out of it. Like, I felt like...
I'll take a look at it.
I watched it, and I was like, I want to blow people's heads up. You know, I want to do that kind of stuff, because that's, you know, like I said, I've seen Deadpool do that stuff in the comics. I'm pretty sure.
I hope they go crazy with it, though. Like, do all these kind of crazy video game throwbacks. Like, I hope there's, like, a side-scrolling beat-em-up level or, you know.
See, I have this feeling like – that would be cool, but I have this feeling like it's going to go too far and it's going to do more fourth-wall-breaking jokes and more insane, weird humor than a good Deadpool story ever would actually do, because – that is what the nerd or the gamer culture who hasn't actually read Deadpool comics and just knows of him through image boards and meme pictures knows him for. I just think it's going to be a really twisted depiction of Deadpool, regardless of whether or not it's Way's version or Kelly's version or Priest's version or anyone's version. And of course, now that's to say nothing about how the actual mechanics of the game will turn out. Right. I'm just worried about the depiction of the character in it.
You do a level that remakes Paperboy, I'd be totally into that. You just
see, I can see that in my mind's eye, but then you have to play it for 20 minutes, and you're like, okay, you're going to get back to the real game then?
Yes.
All right, where are we? that news was. Yeah. Then.
Okay, I think that's all the Marvel news.
Okay.
So I think that just leaves us with ponies.
Yeah. Cole is so happy.
I'm so very happy.
IDW, doing ponies. My Little Pony. It's happening.
Why not? Because it's like one of the biggest industries out there right now. There's probably more bronies at San Diego Comic-Con Twilight Moms. So
that is certainly a thing that we are told is a thing that's happening.
Were there any bony cosplayers?
Oh, there's tons of cosplayers.
Was there a ton of them? They freaky looking? I don't even know what that would look like.
There's a little bit of both. They had the humanized ones, and then they had the ones that actually had made stuffed animals out of them. And yeah, there's a little bit of everything.
Then there are the worst ones.
So, what's the is this a known creative team? I mean, who's going to be on this?
I don't recognize the creative team names. Hang on, let me just look them up. Let's see. Yeah, it is going to be written by Katie Cook with art by Andy Price. And so I don't know either of those creators. But the art is very nice.
Yeah, if you go on to Equestria Daily, you could actually see some preview shots of it, too.
Equestria Daily.
That's the My Little Pony news site.
I mean, what's interesting is there is one image that was shown with it, and I think at least on a visual level, it's rather interesting to see how it is fully shaded and colored and not attempting to replicate like the flash animation style of the show. Beyond the actual use of the character models, you know. It's going to have color. It's going to have covers by Jill Thompson, so that's pretty awesome. But yeah, this is going to be. I'm going to have my eye on this, like, legitimately. Like, we were you can go and listen to the show from yesterday, the San Diego coverage show from yesterday, where we talk more about bronies and bronydom and sort of analyze it. And not in a critical way, just like in an impartial third eye looking in analysis of the nature of the fandom. I'm just interested to see what's going to happen with this. I mean, the bronies do appear to be everywhere, but I wonder how legitimate that. I wonder how much of that is legitimate and how much of that is just volume drowning out. You know, I'm wondering how much of it is signal to noise. Memes appearing everywhere, and how much of it is actually.
I know a lot of bronies that read comics. So.
Well, this is it as well, because I'm sure there are, but then I'm sure that there are more who don't. And I'm wondering, I'm just going to be very interested to see if this is truly going to have the impact on the sales charts that the current surface level appearance of the franchise as a phenomenon would suggest it will have, or what. I'm going to have my eye on it.
That's going to be the thing, that's going to be the thing, is that now that this community has a comic, they're going to have to actually go out and buy it.
Yeah,
and that'll be the thing to see. I mean, I don't have have a horse in the race.
You've got a pony.
So I'm just interested to see where it will turn out.
Do I have to get my ponies out for you? Do I have to?
I'll just be interested to see where it comes out. What it can be is it's going to be a template, I think, in some ways, maybe for, other properties that maybe, thinking about making that jump over to comics as well, and is it going to be something they want to do? So this will be, this may be something that I think that a lot of people will be watching. So
I'll be picking it up. Look for it. Look for it.
I would be just like, I would be so angry with you if you didn't like, buy it and report on it.
It's a new number one. I've got to pick it up.
I want our entire listening audience completely drunk.
So you got to put ponies on the list with my turtles.
So we got to put ponies on there since they're
turtles,
gonna be a
thing zombies.
Now. This certainly is like a sign of the apocalypse. Like if My Little Pony gets a comic, like that's, that's
I'll wear that my I'll wear my Apocalypse Pony shirt for the show.
The zombies are coming, So,
well, right. If He-Man can have one.
Yeah, that's true. All right. We are not. So that is it then.
I think that's about all the news we've had down from San Diego. And I don't know if there are any more panels due to happen now before the end of the day. The last Marvel panel has happened, so cool. Is that.
Well, I will say I know that Brian's going to post some of, not all. I'm going to post the show yesterday from in its entirety, but there will be bits and pieces. So if you want our thoughts on things, it's not so much news reporting as it is sort of the TF Radio Network take and thoughts on some of the things happening. So if you find that interesting, there'll be YouTube versions of that out. So because there was so much news, that's going to count as our end show review. So we're just going to real quickly go through and give some of our recommendations for the week. And we will start with Chris Triplett, as we do.
Hey! I think it's a safe bet that you could probably guess what book I was going to recommend this week.
Scarlet Spider?
No. And Amazing Spider-Man didn't come out. Though I did read Avenging Spider-Man, and it was okay. But no. Walking Dead 100. Oh, my God. The big book of this week.
Wow. I know. There was whole three shelves, at my shop. The people that never read comics came in and bought one, not knowing anything about what was going on. Not that the shop cared, but...
Oh, I'm sure it was, people that knew what was going on. It's people that have, watched the show, and they're like, hey, wait, Walking Dead 100? Okay, let's go buy this.
Yeah, exactly.
There were eight covers for the Deadgum thing. I mean, it was crazy. Variants. I mean, it's like the 90s all over again. I think there was a Chromium cover. Can you back me up on that, McFeely?
I honestly don't know, but that sounds right. There were a lot. There were 15 covers or something to this.
It was crazy. I got the McFarlane cover. I was either going to get it or I was going to get the regular artist cover. I'm happy with it. It's McFarlane. I mean, what can I say? He still looks like he's drawn the same way 20 years ago, but I don't know. But, dude, this comic made me so emotional. I'm not going to say anything about what happens in it, but...
It was fierce.
Did you read it?
I did read it.
Okay. I mean, have you been keeping up with Walking Dead? Or
I
just
have.
Kinda drop off?
No, I've been keeping up on it.
But I didn't know what was going to happen in it. I figured something major would happen. Major character just died a couple issues back.
You think with The Walking Dead, you know they say that not everyone is safe, but you think to yourself, there are some guys that are safe, really. You know,
yeah,
is safe in The Walking Dead.
So it's like you've got characters that are your favorite characters, and you're like, nothing's going to happen to this character. This character's going to be around for another 50 issues. They're not going to do anything to this character. I read this comic on Friday night because I got my comics on Friday. It was kind of late. It was the first comic I read. After reading this comic, I was physically ill.
Really?
I felt like if I could vomit, I would vomit, but I didn't. And it left such a bad taste in my mouth. I didn't read any other comics. I had to wait a day or so before I read any more comics.
Wow. Well, you don't mean bad taste in the sense that it was a bad comic. You just mean
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that the comic affected me in a way in which I was like, I feel sick now. I need to go lay down. And I don't know where they're going to go with it from now. It's terribly interesting to see what happens next, but yeah, it's if you have even a passing interest in Walking Dead, the TV show, I would even if you've never read the comic, I would say you might want to check this out because it's the word gruesome is the best way I could describe it. Oh, God. And I'm not going to say what happens, but when the event happens, and McFeely knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You feel it. I mean, it's rough. And, oh, my gosh. And the section where they're trying this character, the bad guy. There's a bad guy, and his name's Negan. Negan? Is that how you say his
Negan,
name?
Something like that, yeah.
He makes a choice, and that choice is what really messes everything up. And I don't want to say anything else. Just read it, but there's not another comic I could have recommended this week. I mean, Batman was great. I really liked Batman number 11, and I'd recommend it. It's the end to the Court of the Owl story. But as much as I love Scott Snyder, dude, it's Walking Dead. Walking Dead 100 this week. That is the comic everybody should be reading.
Cool.
That's it.
Awesome. Yeah. All right.
I might have to pick that one up.
Thank you all, too.
If I could find it. If I could find it. Maybe I have to download it.
Yeah. All right. Well, Nicole?
All right. Well, I'm going to recommend it's a preview issue of what is going to be coming out in a couple months. It's called Sunset. It's put out by Top Cow. It's Christo Gage and Jorge Lucas. So, it's probably not like Walking Dead, but it's one of those emotional ones. It's one that gets to you because you feel for this person. The main character is kind of like he's an old Vietnam vet. He's getting up there. Oh my gosh. Clint Eastwood. That's basically what he is. He's Clint Eastwood. He's had enough of his life. He just wants to get on. Just wants to live with his dying wife. But everyone is just pissing him off to the biggest end. People. He goes out. He's fed up with people. And he starts just not taking bullshit from anyone. But then you come to find out when he's out shopping for groceries, people find out that he was part of a mob. And he's been on the run for 30 years. So let's just say there's a lot of gruesome stuff that happens in it, but it isn't colored yet.
So it's history of violence?
Yeah, pretty much. But, I mean, it is very violent, but it's not colored yet, so you just get the black and white. He does kill a guy with Drano. I'll just give you that point.
Wow,
right there.
Awesome.
In the parking lot in front of witnesses. Guess what? He's to this point of his life. He just doesn't care. He does not care who saw him, what he does. Yeah, but now he has to be on the run. So if you like a good old mob history, if you guys like to see, you know, because I want to know what this guy, because it gives you like something happened when he was in the war, but they're not telling you what happened yet. And so you're just like, okay, so how did he come to be a war hero into the mob? And so, yeah, it gets you going. Again, it's not colored. It's just heavily inked, very heavily lined. But it's very emotional because this guy is just – you want to root for him, and then he's going out on a killing spree, and you're just like, you still want to root for him. You know? Yeah, for a preview issue, it was only $1. Definitely worth $1, let me tell you. So I recommend that.
Wow.
If you like Clint Eastwood, here you go. He's in comic book form.
Nice.
Get off my lawn. I can just see it. Because there's one part where he is just like on his lawn, and that's why I just picture it. Like, get off my lawn.
Wow.
So, yeah, I recommend it. Especially cool. For $1, man. Yeah.
Can't beat $1.
Can't beat $1.
I'm going to take two recommendations real quick and talk about one that Triplett talked about real quick, which was the Batman, the Court of Owls ending. So if you've read any of the Court of Owls stuff, it's good. You probably want to read all of it before you get to this, but it is well worth a read. It's by no means – I don't want to say that I was like, oh my God, mind blown away by it. But it was a very satisfying ending to it in the sense that, you know, I feel like there's more to the story. There's at least enough mystery that it can be something that's intriguing, and yet it was sort of a satisfying bit of closure. In a good Batman,
don't you think it's more satisfying than you thought this would end? I mean, this has been going on for a long time. I thought we were going to get, like, no satisfaction with the end of the Owl thing. It's going on. A year seems like,
because it's just like a war. I mean, you know, to make a very bad analogy, it's kind of like the war on terrorism. You know, when you're not fighting something specific, it how do you know when you've won? You know, and so I was a little bit concerned about that at the beginning because it wasn't like there was like a villain. There wasn't something that Batman was fighting. He was sort of fighting an amalgamous group of people, an idea in that way, and. It ultimately came around to where there sort of was a villain, and he did sort of defeat them, but in a good way. You know, that's even left a bit ambiguous. So I thought it was a very satisfying ending. I'm satisfied even with – there was a couple of, like, epilogue sort of pieces. One was this four-piece story that's been going on. Which was
the fall of the House of Wayne?
Yeah, the fall of the House of the Wayne, which was a letter from Alfred's father that you actually find out in this never got sent So after you've seen all of this stuff, you realize that, you know, Alfred never, of course, received it for, you know, reasons that are revealed in the comic. So that was interesting. And then in particular, the sort of end piece between Alfred and Bruce, you know, talking about the nature of not knowing and is it better not to know, you know.
Batman's just so crazy. There's no way he can live in a world where he doesn't know.
Exactly.
You know?
And Yes, that is so great because, and you see that difference between, like, Alfred and Bruce, where, you know, in this NB bit, Alfred's trying to say, well, it's okay not knowing because things are just the way they are, and we'll just, you know, go along, and it doesn't really change anything. And Bruce is like, well, yeah, but, you know, we could find out. And Alfred's like, well, it's okay, though. We don't really have to know.
It's a great character study.
Yeah, it really is.
It's like a great character study because, like, it shows why Batman is Batman. This is why Batman can't move on from his parents' death.
Exactly.
This is why Alfred is like, okay, I don't know everything. That's fine, but I can move on.
Yeah, and because Bruce really, he comes back like four times. He's like, yeah, but we can know. Like, we could find out. You know, we really could. And it's why I think even beyond, you know, you see again why even beyond Bruce catching his parents' killers, because there's still questions. There's still possibilities. And he can't let those go. You know, he has this sort of psychological need to know. Whereas Alfred's far more, you know, it's okay, we know enough. You know, there's nothing we can do. So best just to move on. And he's like,
I love this whole story.
So,
I love the whole Court of Owls stuff. I wish more people would be reading it.
It was good. So. Like I said, I don't want to say it was like, it was a good start for this series. It's probably one of the stronger starts for, you know, some of the New 52 stuff.
I mean, it's one of the best New 52 books. I mean, no doubt.
For sure.
Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, they can just freaking stay on Batman for 20 years.
They
I'll
can
be happy.
Stay on Batman. Spot on Spider-Man, and the world will be good.
Yes. But, no change. I don't want change.
But the book I really want to talk about, and I really want you all to read, please save this book. Don't let it die, is Scarlet Spider. It is so great to be able to read a book about a character that hasn't really got a lot of respect, hasn't really got a lot of... I mean, they've been that character that, like, they pull out because they're, like, 90s cool. But this character is, like, really growing into something interesting. They are, you know, we kind of talked about this yesterday, where, you know, the problem with, like, Scarlet Spider in the 90s and, like, the Clone Saga, the Ben Reilly version, is he thought he was Peter. So it was really just another comic with, like, another Peter as Spider-Man. So it seemed very superfluous. Kane, on the other hand, is not Peter. At all. Like, not even on a good day. You know, Peter has that great power, great responsibility. He has a way that he looks at life and things and, you know, has a particular emphasis and things that he does. And Kane doesn't. You know, Kane is, like, really... He's sort of maybe thinking about people beyond himself. Maybe. You know, he has spent his whole life dying, and now he's alive, and, you know, he really likes to keep it that way, and yet he really enjoys kicking ass. And so it's almost like this is more of a way to kick ass than it is to, like, you know, really be a hero. And this is one of the reasons I really recommend this is the beginning of a story, a new story. It's a really good jumping on point because there's a nice little recap bit in the beginning. But just this first bit with Scarlet Spider with Kane here at the beginning, where, you know, Kane's sort of swinging through the city and complaining about how hot it is in Houston. And it is incredibly humid in Houston. It is a horrible city. It stinks. It is a really horrible place. And it's sad that he is there, because I've been there, and it was awful. Sorry to people that live in Houston and like it. What's wrong with you? Anyway, but, like, he's just swinging around and sees a missile launched out of a window of a building. And he's like, huh, that's a missile. Why would that kaboom and this entire floor, like, explodes. And, like, pieces of junk, flaming junk, fall past him. And he's like, holy shit, that was close. Oh, that's too bad I don't have my, you know, my spider sense anymore. That would have probably been helpful. And he looks down.
Oh, he doesn't have a spider sense? I was going to ask
that. He doesn't have
that.
A spider sense. So he's got a lot of things, but he doesn't have that. And,
why did he not sense the missile? But that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So he looks down at the street, and he's like, boy, I'd hate to be those poor suckers down there. The ones that are about to die. Damn it! And so he jumps after and, you know, does a bunch of waving to catch the debris. But, you know, where Peter, and that's, like, this great difference between, like, Peter and Kane, because Peter, he wouldn't have thought. You know, first thing he would have done has been jumping down and trying to do webbing and saving people and stuff. And Kane's like, man, that sucks for them. Man, be great if somebody would, like, help them or something.
I think they just should rename the comic Asshole Spider-Man. And probably...
it is kind of that.
I would probably buy it.
Okay, but here's one of the best parts. This part, literally, like, I don't, like, I'll chuckle. I'll kind of laugh at stuff that happens in comics. Rarely do I nearly choke laughing. So Kane jumps down, spins all these webs, saves everybody, and then turns around and spins some of his webbing to catch himself, basically. And as he's doing that, like, this girl basically falls into his arms. And, which, you know, totally doesn't expect. Nor does she, apparently. And so, he even mentions that, like, if he wasn't deaf from the explosion, her screams would have probably finished the job. And so he drops her down on a rooftop, and she starts screaming, like, oh, my God, you saved me, oh, my God. And he's like, yeah, you know, what happened up there? Well, she starts to, like, tear his mask off, and he's, like, trying to stop her, like, what are you doing? And she starts kissing him. And he's like, she didn't stop. And I didn't either. And you turn the page, and they're naked in bed.
Nice.
Asshole Spider-Man strikes again.
He's like, this may have been a mistake. And I'm like, oh, it's awesome! Of which it turns out that she's the one that... Okay, I just have to finish this last part because it's too good. He's like, he's like, well, I don't even know your name. And she's like, I don't know yours, and you saved my life. And he's like, well... what happened back in the building? She's like, I don't know. It was all this blur after I fired the first rocket.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, and so he has like that Parker luck in the way because things go from like bad to worse. But it's just.
Bitch crazy.
Yeah, but it's just fun and funny and he doesn't care. He kicks ass. He's not Peter. It's not another excuse to have, like, another Spider-Man comic. Like, this is something different. This is a lot of fun. And, you know, it is lighthearted in the sense that it's meant to be that sort of dark funny in that way. And at the end of this issue, the Rangers.
Like the sports team?
No.
Like I had the same response when you told me about this yesterday.
Like
I was
the
what?
Like Walker, Texas Ranger?
Like the Texas Avengers Initiative team.
Okay. Now, who's on them again? The Armadillo?
The Armadillo is a part of that team. Now,
hang on, let me see if I can remember. Okay, there's the Armadillo.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the girl in the cowboy outfit who's good at guns.
Mm-hmm.
Whose name I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Something with a star in it.
Mm-hmm.
Star gun.
Star in her name, two gun girl, Lone Star or something.
Lone Star sounds good.
let's see, who else is on the Texas team? It was a two gun kid on there, maybe. I don't know. Who else is on there?
I can't remember their names, but is it Twister, the guy with the tornado?
Oh, the Texas Twister,
Texas
yeah.
Twister, yeah. He's there. I don't know. There's a girl on fire, a lightning guy, and a robot suit-looking guy. But
that'd be Living Lightning. Would be
yeah, Living
there.
Lightning. Yep.
What are you getting so excited for if you don't know who they are?
Well, I don't know. I know who they are. I don't know who they are individually. I'm just saying, like, it's hilarious and random and crazy. And that's what I love about it. It's like you never know what's going to happen. Like, how random is it?
Is it really that random if he's in Texas? I mean, what other characters could they
be?
in particular because they're sort of – it seems like they may be working for, like, a bad guy. So that's what seems really odd about it. But anyway, This is good stuff.
Shooting Star. Shooting Star is the name of the girl with the guns. Yeah. Red Wilson, the Phantom Rider, and Firebird.
That sounds good.
But this is good stuff. This is fun stuff. Please read it. You will not be disappointed. I know a lot of you keep hearing me talk about this, and then you like keep not reading it and talking about how crazy I am. Well, then read it, and then tell me I'm crazy.
Hey, and if you want some carnage, you could pick it up in a few issues' time.
Yeah, but you know, this is good. Issue 7, pick up issue 7.
Come on, kids of the 90s who haven't read a comic book in 10 years. It's got people from the Clone Saga and Carnage, the most awesome Spider-Man villain ever in it. You love this. This is what you want.
Oh.
I so hope it crosses over with Gambit when Gambit comes out.
I'll be reading it.
All right.
Next month.
All right, Cooper Feely, finish us off here, sir. What do you got?
I was going to talk about Watchmen this week, Minuteman issue number 2, because this is a very interesting issue. In the way that it, after a brief follow-up on the end of last issue, with Captain Metropolis and Silk Spectre conducting the auditions for new members of the Minutemen, it just jumps forward. And it it transitions quite niftily from being what we all thought was going to be an origin story for the Minutemen into just being an adventure of the Minutemen. An early adventure when the team is still getting to know one another, but it's not, at least off the back of this issue, it's not a defining Minutemen adventure where they meet their worst enemy or all the stuff that would affect them forever and eventually drove that one crazy and got that one killed and forced them to break up happen. It's just them fighting crime. And you know, this is really the only one of the Watchmen prequels where you can tell that story, the Minutemen, because they have a whole career. I mean, a lot of the Watchmen characters do have entire careers that you could pluck stories out of, but the Minutemen, by virtue of not being the stars of the original Watchmen, have a lot more room to have stories told about them, where all the actual stars of Watchmen have had the biggest stories of their lives told already, so anything that the other ones do, Comedian again being a really great example, and whatever Night Owl is going to go on to do, they're all going to kind of fall in second place to either an origin or what happens to them in Watchmen. But this one is it's just more of the same quality we expected from number one. But with more of an actual story happening. I mean, it's a little odd, actually, that issue one wound up being such a beat-by-beat character introduction A to Z thing when this one is just an adventure. And we see, you know, they're starting out, they don't do so well. They think they're raiding some kind of illegal smuggling operation, and it turns out to just be illegal fireworks. It doesn't go so well. They do a lot of New Avengers style, sitting around a table chatting. A lot of focus is placed on the relationship between Captain Metropolis and Hanging Justice.
Hooded Justice. Yeah. You want to say hanging because he's got that rope around
his
neck.
He's got that noose around his neck, yeah.
Yeah.
One also finds it's interesting to see, following up after the first issue in our analysis of how the individual characters were treated in it, that again, it is Silhouette who is presented as the single most socially proactive member of the team, who's most interested in getting out there and actually getting some real meaningful good done in the world. And being idealistic and a man dedicated to law, Night Owl joins her in that, where the other characters are, like Silk Spectre, are more interested in their public appearance. Comedian just really doesn't give a toss in any way or shape or form. Dollar Bill is just a mascot, and Hooded Justice and Captain Metropolis have a whole other thing going on. I was a little surprised with how, I suppose I shouldn't have been really, I mean, that is the defining thing about those characters from all the ancillary material in the original Watchmen, is the gay relationship that they had to keep a secret. There's a lot of attention given to that, and frankly somewhat unfortunate juxtaposition across the last couple of pages.
Yeah, I was a little, I don't know, it left me feeling very uneasy. I don't know that I cared for the parallel that was made, whether it was intentional or not.
I don't think it was. Well, to describe it, Silhouette, Night Owl, and Mothman are continuing to investigate the child abduction ring that we saw Silhouette investigating last issue. And as they search through a building for her latest leads, we are in the Watchmen 9-panel grid style, treated to 3 scenes playing out of a child coming in, a flashback to a child coming in here and something happening to them. We don't see what. With the creepy Unseen Playmate poem by Robert Louis Stevenson being overlaid on top of that. Very creepy. Them actually investigating, and Captain Metropolis and Hood of Justice engaging in some BDSM. Which is not new or anything. We have known. I think that was more the Watchmen role-playing game, which is something that a lot of people forget. But like outside of Watchmen, there was a Watchmen role-playing game released along with the other various DC role-playing games that did expand on a lot of the characters and their relationships. In particular, like the idea that Justice was a bit abusive and did have a lot of sex outside of their relationship, and Captain Metropolis just was unable to quit him, even though he was mistreated and sidelined in their relationship. And we're seeing, you know, we're seeing that here, but it's the fact that we are seeing a child abduction ring, which has immediate greater connotations, first of all, based on what we saw in the first issue. And I think it may be mentioned in this one. And just the unfortunate cultural connotations that BDSM and gay relationships have. And they certainly the very end of the issue, which I won't completely spoil. But I don't think it was intentional, but there's definitely some unsettling. I don't think it was.
It is very. It rides that line of almost being offensive in a sense, to for those things to be connected in the way that they are. And,
yeah. Because that scene, the Captain Metropolis and Hood of Justice scene, doesn't actually have anything to do with the other two scenes. I mean, the other two scenes are connected. Like one is showing what happened to the child and the case that Silhouette and the rest are actually investigating, and then this is just playing out between Captain Metropolis and Hood of Justice at the same time. And it's a little unsettling.
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know. I was very uneasy about the end of this. Like, everything up to this end point, I was fine with. And I was actually okay with, you know, starting to see some of the relationship in that sense between Hood of Justice and Captain Metropolis. What you've said is exactly what I felt, that I was not happy with the way it was juxtaposed against, you know, this idea. There is so much negative connection between gay culture and child abuse.
Yeah.
And I think it's, whereas those two things are not related.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, too many connections again between like the BDSM community and between
deviancy in general. Two things like that. So, deviancy is the wrong word for it, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
and that's, you know,
deviance is from the norm.
Right, exactly. So I was, my leaning is to say that I'm almost offended. I mean,
I can't say I'm offended because I'm giving it goodwill to assume it's not deliberate.
If you make that assumption, then yes. But I, you know, the thought and care that's put, you know, to put the panels together and the way that they're laced together, I don't know that I can be that generous. But,
I don't. Well, certainly, like the use of the poem, it's not a creepy poem. It's not supposed to be a creepy poem. Mm-hmm. But the way it's played over these images does create.
In between, the thing that, you know, bothers me and the reason that makes me feel connected is the last six panels, and in particular the two center panels.
Yeah, like I said, yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, that's the hanging. Yes, it's there. Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But is that just an artistic thing? Is that just a visual cue, or is it supposed to go further?
Everything. So, you know, I'd have to assume, that's why I'm saying it's like I'm making the assumption that these things are being connected because they're connected visually and they're connected within the context of the story, even though they're not, you know, even though they're not localized connected, they feel like they're meant to be connected within the story, and that's what bothers me.
I'm not sure if that's just it's hard to say. I mean,
we'll
just have to see where the rest of the thing goes after that.
It depends on, like I said, and that's why I said and it's just this last part. Like, I totally agree with everything else. Like, the rest of this stuff is great. Like, the rest of the story was great.
And there's one or two jokes that don't land. Like the audition scene just doesn't seem in keeping with the tone of the rest of the book. It's an odd one.
Yeah,
the jokes is very easy jokes that don't seem timely or in keeping with the rest of the tone of the thing. But outside of that, like, everything else is really on the money. It's this last strange bit.
Yeah, that's going to be the part that's going to, you know, if it hasn't already, is going to spark a lot of discussion.
I don't know.
And I don't know, you know, where that leads one way or the other, but...
Definitely the series to keep your eye on, as far as the Watchmen prequels goes, because, I mean, it has transitioned out of what seemed like it was going to be a very straightforward point A to point B origin story gathering of the team, and jumped over all of that to just show an adventure of the Minutemen that is very readable stuff.
As a collection...
Yeah, I just got the first issue this week, so I just wanted to say real quick, and I'll be done. I didn't read the first issue when it first came out. I had to wait until I could find it. Now I got them both at the same time, and easily it's like my favorite so far. I totally get what you guys were talking about before with Darwin Cook and the way he does the panels, and it does feel like it's the one that's respecting Watchmen a little bit better than the rest of the books.
The one thing I'll say real quick, because we're about out of time, but the one thing that I thought could be a problem and is a problem and is bothering me about the entirety of Before Watchmen is that were there not any more villains than Moloch?
I know, right? He did everything.
He is the only villain that's been referenced. And I'm like,
surely
there were others. There were them up, you know? But I thought that there was wasn't there a whole scene where, like, Night Owl 1 lists off, like, five or six different villains?
Night Owl had that lady villain. What was her name? I can't remember.
I don't remember any of the actual names, but there were others, you know, and they do sort of dismiss them as jokes, but it's like Moloch has now been in
four. He was referenced in Comedian.
He was the big player.
He's a comedian. He's in Ozymandias.
He's a drug dealer.
That's right, and that's another one of those weird blue-collar crimes they have him doing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just like, I think four feels right, but I don't know that I can narrow it down and say which exact four. But, yeah, I mean, he was in Minutemen. I mean, he was in this issue.
He's named, didn't appear, did he?
But that's what I'm saying. He's been
named. Yeah, I'm just saying he's named, He seems to be their go-to reference villain,
I guess it's just because he played such a major part in the actual Watchmen story. Maybe that's why, but I get what you're saying. Like,
not even the Watchmen story itself makes out that he was their arch nemesis or anything.
But
he's coming off like it here because he's in all of them.
Yeah, and that's what's really bothering me. I thought that might be a problem early on because, you know, it's not like the villain pantheon was very well fleshed out. And it's totally become an issue for me. It's almost something that's taking me out of it because he's referenced so many times. It's just like it's impossible that this one guy could have been so involved in every bit of underworld crime.
He's going to turn out he's going to be the Watchman Kingpin. You just don't know it yet.
All of that, at the end of his life, that he would end up where he was. That's the thing that's bothering me, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, if he was a second-rate player, if he was just part of a pantheon of villains, I can totally see him ending up as a washed-up cancer victim. But for as big as they have him here, it's making it hard for it to lead to that point. So, anyway, that's the only, like, big gripe I have about the books as a collective. And that's like
I'm
an editorial
thing. I'm just waiting for the trade. It'll be so much easier for me to read when it's out on trade.
But that,
I already pick up too much stuff as it is.
Oh, I know. I know, and I'm constantly cutting and hoping, you know, some things get canceled. I know it's sad that we're not really talking about Regeneration 81, but, well.
Hey, it happened.
It's a thing that happened. You know, I think
it happened.
It's cool. It's okay. I mean, if you like the old, you know.
The last couple of pages of it got me on board for it. We've talked about it in the past, but basically, I said it on the show yesterday, it's the fourth continuation of the Marvel continuity after issue number zero. I don't see it as being any more legitimate or real or official a continuation, given that two out of the three others were written by Simon Furman, and two out of the three others had art by one of the original creators, and one of them was actually published by the original publisher of the series. It would be one thing if this was about directly picking up where the series left off and actually telling the stories that had always been intended to be told back then, but he couldn't because the book was cancelled. But it's jumped forward 21 years, the same number of years in real time. It's got some very noticeable plot elements that have clearly filtered in from IDW continuity, with Cup as a member of the Wreckers, with Bludgeon attempting to...
That's the part that I liked. I'm like, hey,
well, no, it's not that it's not to like or enjoy or anything, but it's just Cup as a Wrecker, Magnus as a bureaucrat, Bludgeon attempting to resurrect Thunderwing. Things that probably, maybe except for the Bludgeon Thunderwing one, because they did something similar in one of the continuations as well with Megatron instead of Thunderwing, but things that wouldn't have happened back then, just serves to highlight for me how it is not, it's not what it was going to be. And my view of it was like, if you're not going to go back to your original plans and you're coming up with something new, then go big or go home.
Right.
And the issue does not go big until the last few pages. And they are so big that I could not help but be pulled in and be quite intrigued to see where it's going to go next.
I'm going to keep reading it. I'm interested in, like you said, once it gets beyond that point. I think that, I think if this would have come out a year ago, a year and a half ago, I'd have been, like, eating it up. But I think that Transformers comics are almost too good now for this to really, you know, be as big. But we'll see. It's going to depend on where the next two issues go.
Now, people, you know, wanted this. They championed it. They better go and buy it.
They better buy it.
Because the BotCon that I went to, they were like, well, would we rather have this or would we rather have an animated comic? And everyone was like, animated? Hello?
Yeah. But we're not doing that. We got this. So.
I mean, I don't think this is that. And remember, this is just a mini-series anyway. This is only going to take us up to 100 and then that's
so
tie-off.
It's not going to be huge. All right, cool.
Just before we wrap up, there was one other point of news that I did forget. We talked about this on the show yesterday as well, but I figure it's relevant here given the rage we all displayed regarding Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Avengers Assemble. Now, the story was initially reported as Jeff Loeb saying that Avengers Assemble, the new Avengers cartoon with the movie cast, would be following on from Earth's Mightiest Heroes. So that was a thing. But I've got the actual quote in front of me from the live panel as it was reported at Newsarama here. And what Loeb said was, Earth's Mightiest Heroes was always going to be 52 episodes. That's a pretty big number, and a lot of shows never get there. Point the first. That's a lie, okay? Because if it was always going to be 52 episodes, then there wouldn't have been a giant plot left hanging. The Surtur plot is on...
Exactly.
You know... Non-spoilers for the end of for people who haven't seen
it. Yeah, I haven't finished watching it yet.
It's non-spoilers because the Surtur plot isn't resolved. It's left hanging. So it was never intended to stop there necessarily. All right.
Yeah.
Then he said that they wanted to transition out just the same way we do in comics. That's what we're doing. We're not in any way saying Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes never happened. You will see an epic conclusion and then you'll say, what's next? It's a cast that has a lot of similarities in the movie. It will have that epic tone, it will have that humor, and it will have those kinds of huge battles. That does not in any way say to me that is a continuation.
No, in fact,
that is
a
lot of spin and doublespeak to try and make it sound like it might be, but that when it actually comes out and isn't, they can point at it and go, we never said that.
And in fact, to me, it sounds like the exact opposite. By saying it's what happens in the comics, well, what happens in the comics? Marvel, light reboot, you know. So to me, it sounds exactly like it's going to be something completely different. I mean, not entirely, but, you know, in terms of tone, story, those kinds of things.
I mean, if they could just continue the story directly, you know, even if that did mean that they were changing everything over to change up the cast, just as long as it didn't actually be, you know, completely different. If it was the same, I could get with it. But this does spew from the mottled lie hole of Jeff Loeb, fleck black with the moist specks of 1,000 untruths.
Yeah.
So I don't believe it.
No. You're getting a new show, kids. I don't know what to tell you. You're getting a new show.
Oh, and Green Lantern's going to be back in September.
Yes, and Guy Gardner will be joining
Guy Gardner.
The cast.
Good. Just,
bring
that,
all that, yeah.
Just in time for him to die in the comics. So that'll be... They announced I think that's what they were talking about yesterday. I heard that was some DC news that I think Guy is going to bite the big one at the end of this whole third army deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's...
Is he coming back as Warrior Guy Gardner?
Probably. I don't know. I just read like one of the headline bits, but you know, the thing that they've been building to in Green Lantern for actually a couple of years, but in particular after the New 52, is this third army idea where the Guardians are like, well, the Green Lanterns don't work. We're going to have to chunk them like the Manhunters and come up with something else. So, so the Green Lanterns are trying to say, no, we want to be, but you're assholes. So I don't know, but there's some talk that Guy might bite it at the end of that.
I don't like that.
So I don't know. We'll see.
I don't like.
Anyway, it's been a great show, but we probably should get out of here because we did a lot of
podcasting.
Sorry,
I couldn't get into the chat for some reason. So. Bye, chat.
Sorry, Chad. But we will be back next week. It'll be episode 110 next week. So
wow,
we're just charging right on towards the next 100 episodes. So crazy,
we're beating
crazy.
The hell out of Walking Dead. Take it.
Sure. Yeah, we totally passed them up. So, once a week instead of a month. So, thanks so much for tuning in, everybody that tuned in yesterday. Again, thank you as well. Hopefully, you'll get some YouTube bits of that. Go to the website fanboyversus.com. You can check out all of our past shows. You can also follow us on Twitter at @fanboyvs and get live updates as we're broadcasting as well. Ask us questions, all that kind of good stuff. We appreciate when you do that. So anyway, thanks for listening, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.